Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell, here today with Mile End. Mile End Delicatessen, the people there with Noah Burnimoff, Ray Cohn, and Chef Aaron Israel. So in other words, just a whole bunch of Jews in a room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just eat.
Yeah, we're just going to eat and kvetch.
We do have a lot of food.
Yeah, drop whatever Yiddish phrases you might want to hear. Right before Passover, too, which is kind of ideal for this conversation about Jewish cuisine starting to come back into vogue outside of, you know, just the deli food. What Aaron's doing at Mile End at night is tremendous for all us noshers of Ashkenazi, you know, from knishes to, you know, things with gribbiness and schmaltz. It was always kind of housed in these funny places in New York and around the country. But first, kind of want to talk about Montreal, about Canada. Noah, sure, and Ray met at McGill College while Noah was pursuing something completely different than smoked meat, and Ray was working in art. Tell us a little bit about Montreal, where you lived, and where you ate there, because I think it gives a good basis of why Mile End is now in Brooklyn.
We lived in the Plateau in Mile End, which are communities, downtown communities, that kind of serve as the confluence of East and West in the city, which is kind of French and English. So that creates a... You know, breeds a certain culture, creativity and acceptance and, you know, openness. And, you know, you're just exposed to markets and traditional sort of cooking and traditional sort of ways of going about buying your food and making your food, and the tradition of eating food at home is really strong. And mix that in with, you know, the long-standing cultures of those neighborhoods, which, you know, happen to be Jewish immigrants of the, you know, early part of the 20th century, and many of whom were Romanian and Polish. And you have this amazing, you know, combination, hybrid of you know, moving ahead and forging creatively forward, and recognition of, you know, where the neighborhoods come from the past.
Yeah. And wonderful smoked meat.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Schwartz's.
Don't want to forget that. And Schwartz's, which I just recently was at and I'm going to again, which is what, just a deli per se, or it's an institution?
It's a delicatessen, as I think delicatessens are done in Montreal, which is to be really good at, a narrow sort of focus. You know, Schwartz's is the place to get smoked meat.
Yeah.
And Walensky's is the place to get salami.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how it, you know, you get chopped liver at Lester's. So it's kind of that's the culture, the sort of wholesale, you know, Grand Depot of you know, of delicatessen, of Jewish food, is really unknown in Montreal, and was sort of shocking when I came to New York and kind of learn that that's really what delicatessen meant here.
Yeah.
So, you know, Montreal has that ability to hone in on a very specific thing and do it really, really well, because less concerned about variety, more concerned about quality.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you were saying, Katz's, Carnegie, Second Ave, Deli kind of had this breadth, this reach that was far more than the myopic Montreal.
Yeah. Yeah. It sort of swallowed up all the subcategories, and now it's just kind of like a, you know, at least some of them feel this way. Some of them, the menus feel this way, but it's kind of like a cafeteria of Jewish food.
I mean, were there appetizing shops like Russ and Daughters up in Montreal too?
Less so. No, yeah. No. It's, I mean, there was in the past, and those closed and no one swallowed them up. And so what you ended up seeing was, you know, that culture, not dying, but just sort of being picked up more in the form of like luncheonettes serving bagels and lox.
But what's interesting is that the bagel stores in Montreal don't make sandwiches for you. When you walk on in, you grab a hot bagel out of the oven, and if you want to buy a side of cream cheese, you have the ability to do so. But otherwise, you're on your own.
Yeah, Saint Viateur, Fairmont, the two most famous ones in Montreal. For those of you that don't know the debate between what's better, a New York bagel or a Montreal, do you want to, one, weigh in on what you think, and two, what the real difference between?
Well, the real difference is that the bagels are baked in 75-year-old wood-burning ovens. You know, we could talk about the flour they use. We could talk about, you know, some people argue about the water. I mean, I think that, you know, all those things affect the outcome, but ultimately it's the sort of traditional method that's never been departed from.
Yeah.
But New York bagels are, there are some incredible New York bagels too. So I feel like it's a false dichotomy between the two.
They're such different species. Yeah.
And I was waiting for Noah's lawyerly pedantics to come out. Because I kind of want to get back to, you know, Noah went to school for what? Political science?
Political science.
And Ray went to school for art history.
That's right.
But I didn't do much learning in school.
Seemingly, you did a lot of eating and influencing your, you know, future. But when you came back, I mean, Ray, you worked at the Met. You were telling me producing audio guides. It's funny, the similarities of how you go about educating yourselves about, or other people about Jewish food is kind of like those guides.
Well, certainly. It's all about storytelling and having a connection, you know, to what you're eating, what you're looking at, what you're thinking about, where it came from, how we make it.
Yeah, because, you know, outside of Bubby's house, where does the kind of cuisine you serve at Mile End exist in New York?
I think that's a tough one. I think there, I know Balbusta down on Mulberry Street just opened up, and the chef there, she has a falafel shop.
Yeah.
And so many tacos. I've been going to a lot of taco shops.
The taco in the Middle East.
She's got a falafel shop.
Oh, tame. I love that stuff.
Which is great, and I know that she opened up Balbusta last year, and she's exploring sort of, you know, the Balbusta, the Jewish housewife, and she's, but her angle is more, she's Israeli, and her angle is more coming from a Mediterranean influence. I think for the Eastern European food, it's a real tough one. I've been out to Kanishnash out on it's really hard to find on Queens Boulevard. They give you the address online,
and I
must have spent maybe a solid hour walking around, and I just couldn't find it. I finally found it. And there was this really sweet Romanian lady standing behind the counter. And I went in. I think I was looking for a really good knish. And it was a very, very good knish. But I ended up leaving with stuffed cabbage, pierogies, like three different kinds of soup, because she said they were all the best. and it was really good. It was a real like hole-in-the-wall place. I mean, there was like totally bare bones. And it was really, really good home cooking. But I think that as far as you know, restaurants, I don't know too many people who have yet to really explore like Ashkenazi food, you know, in a restaurant setting. And there are great delis, you know, and they touch upon sort of traditional deli classics, like Noah had said, almost like a smorgasbord of, you know, like a greatest hits kind of a thing. But there's so much more, I think to it, and there's a lot of ingredients that are and a lot of dishes that are just sort of being lost or that people aren't really putting a lot of time into sort of re-exploring.
Yeah. So I'm just going to read a list of, you know, well-known Ashkenazi foods between chopped liver, gefilte fish, borscht, challah, hamantaschen's, rugula, schmaltz, kreplach, simis, knish, yet again, gribenis, kashavarnishka, veal schnitzel, matzo ball soup. These are all things that you do at Mile End. But you do them to the point where in Montreal, you spoke of, you know, knowing exactly what you're doing, focusing on that and making it great. And everything at Mile End ends up being great. It's not just this, you know, spread thin smorgasbord.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, excuse me. I think it's, you know, it's important to note that there is some sort of tension underlying the idea of us being a Montreal Jewish deli, that somehow it, you know, to think of Montreal as this place that focuses really closely and then to, you know, put out a great deal of variety of foods. I mean, there's a tension there, but to a large extent, I think it's more of a capturing of the method, the essence of what they're doing in Montreal. And that's to look at something very closely and say, okay, this is something that's very important to us and plays a major part in how we think about our culture. And, you know, we're going to put everything we have into making this the very best that we can. And I think that's sort of the approach that we take at Mile End is, you know, things that sometimes in cookbooks are just like chop and throw in a pot and call it a day, you know, 6 hours later. And we're looking at that and saying, these are important dishes, but maybe there's a different way to make them that, you know, keeps them completely consistent with history, but, you know, says, well, you know, what we know now is more than what we knew then.
Well, I mean,
and let's make it better.
It's also taking a technique. Aaron went to art school in Baltimore and then came to New York to work in a lot of lauded kitchens, from what, Avoce to, you know, Teresi most recently. Mm-hmm. So there is, you know, a foundation there on how to cook these foods and make them better. Not to say that our grandmothers and, you know, ancestors didn't make it great, but there's definitely some new techniques involved.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of really great stuff, you know, going on right now in New York, in this country, with food and people really starting to discover, you know, just all this great produce and or wonderfully raised meats and that kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, traditionally a lot of Ashkenazi food is, you know, a lot of meat, a lot of potatoes. And here we have, you know, we have access to, you know, in the springtime, you know, beautiful ramps, asparagus. And so, you know, maybe if you were in Poland, you know, 80 years ago, you might not really, you know, have access to that. But, you know, as a modern Jewish person living in New York now, you know, I think, well, you know, what would, you know, one of my relatives who was from Poland, what would they do with that? You know, maybe they would toss it in some chicken fat, you know, asparagus and chicken fat. And like, can this be good? You know, and then you start thinking about how to balance the flavors. And but there's just so much great stuff available now that I think as long as you stay true to sort of to an idea and to the certain concepts, that, you know, you can use a lot of, you know, newer, fresher ingredients in the food.
I want to touch on two things. One, some of the dishes that I've had at Mile End, which have been prime examples of that, like the schmaltz radishes with gribenis, and also the tongue salad, the pickled tongue. Sweet and sour tongue salad, which is, my grandma used to make that, and the flavor profile right there, perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fantastic. But we keep on talking about Ashkenazi. Mm-hmm. There's also the other sect, Sephardic. What is the biggest difference, other than Ashkenazi kind of being, you know, along the Rhine from Germany down, to Sephardic being Middle East? What is the difference in flavors and ingredients?
I think with Sephardic food, I think Sephardic food is so it's so widespread. I mean, you know, you can be like on the Iberian Peninsula and you have a lot of Spanish ingredients and, you know, smoked paprika and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, when you're, and then when you get to like the Jews of Syria, and I have this wonderful book, Aromas of Aleppo, and,
oh, yeah,
and it, you know, it talks with the Aleppo pepper and, you know, and really, like, I think any Jewish food is, it's sort of, it draws off of where it originated from, you know. I mean, so, you know, I grew up in Great Neck, and we have a lot of Persian Jews there, and, you know, the Iranian, the Jews from Iran, you know, they use the dried lemons, they use a lot of dried fruit, and you wouldn't see that necessarily in somebody who is a Jew from Morocco. You know, they would probably be going with more harissa, and so it always, I think this, it always reflects sort of a local tradition. And the same thing is with Ashkenazi food, but I think it was a little more limited, you know, with, you know, Poland and Russia and a smaller area.
Yeah, meat and potatoes, like you said, stewed, long processes. It was funny that Noah actually mentioned earlier that you don't do a lot of, you know, chop up, throw, and let stew, but you do serve a cholent, right?
Yeah, we did, and it's not on the menu anymore,
because
it's, you know, thankfully, it's starting to get a little warmer out.
That you have greens.
No, I don't know if anybody really wants to eat a giant pot of beans and barley and stewed veal when it's getting nicer out. But I think that, you know, we took an approach to that dish where we kept the flavors very, very traditional, but instead of, say, using, like, beef, and we have a lot of great beef on the menu at Mile End, mm-hmm. we decided to use veal short ribs for it. And we sort of broke it down, and we cooked everything a little bit differently. Put it back together so the beans are nicely cooked, the barley is nicely cooked, the veal is nicely cooked, and so hopefully the experience is something to evoke what you would maybe, you know, your grandmother's cholent. But we just try to add a little more technique to it.
Yeah, I said, we're going to take a quick break and come back and maybe even read some of Maxwell House's Haggadah. Well, we'll go over their upcoming Seder menu to be premiered at a pop-up by the James Beard Foundation at Chelsea Market next Tuesday. You've been listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio, and a little surprise from the lovely Feathers, Noah's old band.
Oh, God.
Service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience, how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Noah Burnimoff, Ray Cohn, and Aaron Israel of Mile and Delicatessen. I don't want to say deli because it seems like it's a shonder to, you know, shorten it, and that delicatessen has that much more context to it. But we were just listening to The Lovely Feathers. I was going to say The Lovely, Lovely Feathers, but you have to have that lovely before.
You could add as many lovelies ahead of feathers as you wish.
Oddly, I've been told that before, but not in that context. But that's another story. Maxwell House, The Haggadah.
It's a classic.
The best. The best. I don't know how they cornered the market in Haggadahs, but they did. But Passover Seder. Passover starts next Monday. Wow. Creeps up. For those of you that don't know Passover, look on Wikipedia. I'm not going to explain it. But it is, an eight-day event opened by the biggest of the Seders. And on the Seder plate, there's a whole bunch of elements served to equate themselves back to the strifes of the Jews in Egypt. Aaron, take it away as to what a traditional Seder plate actually has on it.
All right. Well, you have you have the matzah, and then you have the karpas, which is it could be parsley or
the bitter herb.
You dip that in salt water.
And what do they actually relate to historically? I mean, bitter herbs were the tears of the
yeah. It's there's a salty bitter quality to the tears of the enslaved Hebrews.
This is some really Egypt. Tough Hebrew school stuff. Yeah. Oh, no.
Making my parents proud of all the money they spent. Yeah.
you have a baked egg or a hard-boiled egg. We go on the plate.
The betza?
Yes.
Yes.
The betza.
Yeah. And then you have lamb, which is zeruah, which is, the paschal lamb, the lamb that was... You would sacrifice, and we should maybe just Wikipedia the story, but the painting of the blood on the doorframe, and then the charoset, which is supposed to represent the mortar to build the pyramids. Did we leave any out? Horseradish,
Marar,
yeah, the horseradish.
I feel like we all just got bar and bat mitzvah.
Yeah. So. It's like, where are we again?
Yeah.
Is there, with the Haftorah? Or?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. I know, I was actually going to hide an afikoman in here and tell you guys to find it after the show. But
What's the prize?
That's, pizza? Sweet. I don't know. Leavened pizza?
Leavened pizza.
So you're taking this idea of a Seder plate and on next Tuesday, mm-hmm. Having a pop-up Seder at the Chelsea Market through the James Beard Foundation.
Yeah, they approached us and they asked us to participate in it, and it's such a great honor. There's some amazing chefs that have quite long credential lists that are also participating in it, and so for them to ask us was just really wonderful. Mitchell Davis, who's the vice president of the James Beard Foundation, he's also from Canada, and he's Jewish, and actually have his cookbook. It's called The Ment Chef. And
oh, I thought you were going to say Kitchen Sense too, which is an epic Bible of his.
Mm.
And
so he has a great appreciation for Jewish food. And he approached us, and he has this space in the Chelsea Market for 27 days. And Laurent Gras is the first chef. He's doing five nights starting tonight. He wanted us to cook a Seder for the second night of Passover. And it was such a, when he said it, it was such a great honor, and I think just so exciting because, I have such a respect for the James Beard Foundation, and it's such a great forum, I think, for Jewish food, and the fact that he wanted to do this like really grand Seder is I just think really awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's, and we, he got George Robinson, who's the author of, The Essential Guide to Judaism. He also writes for Jewish Weekly, which, and I, when I when I saw George today, he said, I write for Jewish Weekly. It's the largest, most widely distributed Jewish paper in North America. He said that's like being the tallest midget in a room. Which I thought was actually pretty he's a very witty guy,
yeah.
witty guy. So I'm sure his Seder will be full of inflections like that.
Yeah.
It will be rather entertaining. So there'll be a traditional Seder for about an hour and a half before that he'll be officiating, and then afterwards we're gonna cook a dinner, and each course in the dinner is going to be, you know, based off of an item on the Seder plate. So we're going to do a pretty traditional take on gefilte fish, only not as crappy as the canned stuff you get.
Yeah, you're going to still serve it in a jar?
We're going to do some jarred food for it. It's going to be a sort of a traditional take, but, you know, instead of serving it with the cold jelly, which I know some people are somewhat offended by, you know, we are going to touch into Spain and use a pil-pil sauce, which is essentially, you know, cold jelly that, you emulsify oil into. So that is
one of my favorites.
So that is Sephardic, you know, I guess. But at the same time, I think it's really appropriate for something like gefilte fish.
Yeah.
You know, it stays true to what it is. Like, you know, there's jelly, but, you know, some people are a little grossed out by the... I like the jelly, but some people, you know, they don't like the jelly.
No, I don't like the jelly. What other dishes are you going to be premiering?
We're going to be doing a real slow-cooked egg that we're gonna serve with asparagus and a warm schmaltz vinaigrette and top it with a load of Gribenis, which my mom, of course, will point out is not how she likes to eat. However, you know, for this event, you know, maybe she'll enjoy it.
Now, can anyone can jump in, tell us what schmaltz is, and then tell us what Gribenis is.
So Gribenis is fried chicken skin, and schmaltz is chicken fat, which can be utilized in many different forms to make vinaigrette or dressing or, you know, enhance really any dish.
Or what? Be consumed accidentally at Sammy's, yeah. which I've seen many people. They're like
those glowing yellow little maple syrup pours.
Yeah, whoops. Yeah. That's a
steak done.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know Sammy, Sammy's Romanian. It's a trip.
Yeah.
A hoot and a holler. Go have your, you know, adult bar mitzvah there if you'd like.
Every day is bar mitzvah day at Sammy's.
Dance the horror. Crazy. Have vodka and ice. Nuts. A couple other dishes.
Yeah, and then
I'm just trying to sate my Seder.
Sure. Well, for the karpas, where you'd be dipping parsley into salt water, we're going to be taking veal sweetbreads. We're going to bread them in matzo meal and parsley. We're going to fry them, and then we're going to make a cucumber salad that, you know, we're going to sort of like a new pickle. So the liquid is going to come out of the cucumber, that sort of salty cucumber water, and we serve it with the cucumbers and that salty water that comes out of cucumbers, and you'll be sort of like dipping the sweetbread into that water. A little chili oil, a little preserved lemon.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, being that it is mile end, you know, we're going to obviously take advantage of our smoker and for the lamb, we're going to do whole smoked lamb shoulders and serve them with Jerusalem artichoke kugel, because even though Jerusalem artichokes have nothing to do with Jerusalem, the word
people think they do.
People think they do,
and so like, that's really all that counts.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, just because your name's Israel, are you really related to the Jews?
No, actually, it's more his middle name, Meyer.
Yeah,
I'm actually Mexican.
Yeah,
Israel is my first name.
Pitcher for the Mets.
And then the last course is going to be based off of choroset, and you know, we're gonna we want to make little like chocolate triangles so they look like pyramids, and you know, well, I mean, you know, represents the mortar. We could do flourless walnut cake.
Yeah.
Our baker is he's really awesome because he actually has never eaten any of this stuff. He actually can make it good because he doesn't know how crappy
he's not
be.
Weighed down by the years of oppressive baking.
Oppressive Passover.
Or as Noah was telling me last week, it's not goyim. Your baker, who we should have had on as well, and he could have brought me a whole bunch of hamantaschen and rugula. You guys are exploring these traditional things, and like you said, making them better. What are some of the improvements in baking? You're making your own rye bread.
Yeah, we make our own rye bread, and probably, you know, one of the best rye breads I've
absolutely ever eaten.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Zingerman's in Michigan makes an incredible rye bread, but I honestly haven't tasted a deli sandwich on bread like that in a long time. And it was a big thing for us because we were going with Ore Washers, which is also an excellent bread, but you know, ultimately we really wanted to put our own bread out there, and we think it's, you know, it's excellent, and it's definitely an improvement for the sandwich. So there's rye breads, we're doing challahs, we're doing
challahs are only on Fridays?
Every Friday. We usually, you know, we'll bake off a bunch of challah on Friday morning. But we also do all of our own rolls. So we make like onion rolls and Kaisers and Kumuwek rolls for the beef on weck. We make pletzel, which is like a long forgotten kind of flatbread, garlicky, poppy, oniony flatbread that we basically just convert a little challah. You know, it's a converted challah recipe, and it's, you know, it has that same kind of cakey quality, and it's great with chopped liver.
Mm.
But you know, things like rugelach, humantaschen on Purim, we do mandelbrot, just kind of like the, you know, Eastern European biscotti cookie.
For brunch on the weekends, we take the challah and twice bake it, so soak it in maple and have a sweet treat for a Saturday morning.
Yeah, I keep on forgetting. Well, I don't forget that you have these Montreal influences, but, you know, maple.
Yeah.
Foie.
Well, we've talked about foie a lot.
Sure.
It's just more a matter of getting it incorporated into something that we're doing, but it's also historically, I mean, foie gras is very, very close to you know, the historic you know, Jewish roots in Eastern Europe.
I really think a foie gras kishka would be good. I don't know if that's kind of off.
Kishka is like
that's
that.
A heart stopper, yeah. Right there.
Well, I mean, kishka is already a heart stopper.
Yeah, it's just so the people know what kishka is. It's a chicken fat sausage.
Yeah. So we'll just sub out the chicken fat, and we'll use foie gras instead.
Oh, I can do that. But Kurds too. You serve poutine.
Yep.
At the restaurant. Now, being that a lot of people haven't been to Mile End in Montreal, do you feel like you straddle this funny line sometimes? Because more during the day, it is attributed to, you know, that deli style, and then at night, Aaron kind of starts cooking more Ashkenazi. Do you like living in both those worlds? Is it hard sometimes, or have you found like great amalgamations of the two things happening?
We're a lot of different things to different people. So some people think of us as a bagel shop, others just a smoked meat place, and then there are those that appreciate the home style cooking that we offer in the evening. So I think we really enjoy the fact that we can position ourselves in many different ways and offer out things that are, you know, unique to Montreal, and then also these reinventions of some classics.
Yeah,
there's so many different people that come in there. You know, you get like some people, you get people who aren't Jewish who are just from Montreal, and they're like, we want to come in here for poutine. You know, and then you get other people who are like, you know, they're like, they've been eating at Katz's for the last 50 years, and like, you know, they want to eat the smoked meat at Mile End. And then you get other people who come in, they're like, we want to see what kind of, you know, Ashkenazi Jewish food you have. So it really, like, you know, and I think that's kind of cool. You know,
people
come in for so many different reasons. You get some people at dinner, like, they don't even want to look at the menu, like, two sandwiches, poutine. And then other people, you know, they look at the menu and they order other stuff. But it's great that, it appeals to a wide variety of people.
So you want to become like those establishments like, you know, Schwartz's or Wilinski's and garner this regular crowd and eventually, you know, get to the point where someone gets a sandwich named after them, which was a terrible segue into the Ruth Wilinski itself. A sandwich of what? Smoked beef salami.
Yeah.
Mustard on an onion roll.
Yeah.
And it's
that we press.
That you press.
Fresh and pressed.
Freaking delicious. But it's
so simple. It's like aside from making the salami.
Yeah.
Once you've made the salami, it's pretty much like,
yeah,
the easiest sandwich to make.
But it's a tribute to Ruth at Wilinski's.
It's a tribute to Wilinski's and the fact that it's been run by, you know, a woman well past that point in most people's lives that would, you know, most people by her age are sitting in Florida, staring at the water, and she's in Montreal in the middle of the winter, you know, running a sandwich shop, and that's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, it's a tribute to the sandwich that is, you know, that is their namesake and the person who makes it possible for me to go there and get that sandwich.
Yeah. And do you feel like you have items on your menu that will be Ruth Wilinski's to somebody else?
We hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Smoke meat will always be smoke meat. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. We'll see.
You know, it's a funny thing, like what you said before about, you know, like straddling that line, and, you know, like Jewish food has evolved so much, you know, over the years wherever like Jewish people have settled, and they've like incorporated, you know, incorporated the local traditions into what they do. So, you know, right. You know, poutine is a Montreal thing, but like, and who's to say that, you know, in, you know, 100 years, Jewish people won't be like, poutine's a Jewish dish, you know, like, but it starts somewhere, you know? So why not?
Yeah.
You know?
That would be so funny if that actually happened one day. It's like the French Canadians are like, how did this happen?
Taken away.
It's like les Juifs.
That's actually helping my multinational appeal by the more international language spoken on this show. We should just conduct a whole show in French.
You get like federal grant money for diversity and multiculturalism.
I was about to say we have a room full of Jews. I mean, it's not really helping the fact as much. I don't want to not mention Christmas. Which seems a little odd to mention Christmas for a Montreal Jewish deli, but this past Christmas was a very special one in what was cooked Christmas night.
Sure, sure. Chinese food.
Absolutely. Yeah. Traditional Jewish Christmas.
Yeah.
Totally traditional.
Yeah. Did you show a movie as well?
We wish we could have, but we're not technologically
too small.
We're too small, but
we're very close to BAM, so a lot of people headed over there afterwards.
Awesome, awesome. And for those of you that don't know, why Chinese food on Christmas?
Well, it's the only places that are open.
Yeah,
and Jews have nothing to do on Christmas. But there's a really long history, I think, of Jewish people eating Chinese food for so many reasons. It's like, it's safe trife, you know, and I think, you know, I grew up eating Chinese food with my family. I know Noah as well, you know, you.
Yeah, it's just as much a part of my experience as a Jew in Montreal as going to Schwartz's.
Yeah.
And so why not, you know, why not cook Chinese food on Christmas? I mean, if Jewish people are going to go out and eat it, why not be the ones cooking it? And, you know, we tried to take a sort of a lighthearted approach to it, but also cook, like, you know, cook serious food. Like, we took it very, you know, very seriously. But it was a lot of fun. It's funny because when we talked about it, you know, Noah brought it up to me, and I think we kind of brought it up to each other, like, at the same time. It was like something we always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And the response was totally overwhelming. I mean, we got booked up immediately, and there was a waiting list, and, you know, people just really enjoyed themselves, which was so great to see.
Excellent. And we're hoping that this might be a more reoccurring thing other than just once a year.
Yeah, we've been talking about it. I think we think it would be pretty cool, you know, traditionally, you know,
Sunday night,
you know,
maybe. Sunday night's, you know, it's a big... it's a big Chinese food night.
Yeah.
Smoked meat, fried rice.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
I mean, the thing is, ultimately, what we realize, it does take a lot of work to completely change the thing that you do on a regular basis. So, yeah, more often, perhaps, consistent and predictable, perhaps less so.
And you have a tentative name called Safe Trife.
Yeah. No, it's just great. Great food.
Yeah.
Great Chinese food.
So, everyone, catch the wave. Not that the Jews haven't been around for thousands upon thousands of years, but check out Montreal's Jewish Deli in Brooklyn, mileandbrooklyn.com. Is that correct?
Mileandbrooklyn.com.
Mileandbrooklyn.com. And Noah, Ray, Aaron, thank you. Happy Seder. Happy Pesach.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy leavening.
Yeah.
Unleavening. Easy unleavening.
Next time you sit at your dinner table, maybe use a pillow.
Drink four glasses of wine.
Yeah. Manischewitz with a pickle back. All good ideas.
Oh, that's a great one.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan-Turkel. Thanks to Jack Inslee, our engineer. Whole Foods for sponsoring, and hope to have you back here next Tuesday at 3.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.